begin in Revelation chapter 3. I had a hard time kind of, I had a lot of information on this, what I wanted to do this morning, what I wanted to put in the sermon, but I had a hard time kind of figuring out what to put in, how to start this off, what was going to be, you know, when you write a paper, when you write a research paper, you start off with your thesis statement. What was my thesis statement going to be? What did I want? What was the point I could get across? And I could think of nothing, so then I just chose the Bible, right? I chose God's word. It's written right there for us. I can't do any better. I'll let the word speak for itself. So turn, if you would, to Revelation chapter 3. We're going to start off in verse 14. And it says, unto the angel of the church of the Laodiceans write these things, saying, Amen. The faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God, I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot, now would thou wert cold or hot. So then because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth. Because thou sayest, I am rich, and increased with goods, and have need of nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched, and miserable, and poor, and blind, and naked. Verse 17 is what I would like to kind of preach about. We've heard the sermons, we've heard people talk about the I would that you were cold or hot, and that you are lukewarm. We've heard all those sermons, but what I would like to focus on today is verse 17. Verse 17 is, and I don't know if we're in the Laodicean age, I've heard it say that we are. I'm not here to say that for sure. I would think there are. There's facts that point to it. There's some things that are going on in today's age that could point to the fact that we could be in the Laodicean age. But what I would like to focus on is, I am rich. I am increased in goods. I am in need of nothing. Because I am self-sufficient, because I am self-made, because I did all these things, I am in need of nothing. That is what I would like to focus on today. I didn't need any help getting to where I am today. You don't know the adversity that I had to go to get to where I am today. That's the attitude of a lot of people nowadays. Everybody loves a good underdog story, right? I mean, Hollywood has made a fortune out of the little guy coming from nothing and going into something big. Everyone loves that good underdog story, right? I mean, Hollywood has made tons and tons of movies. I could list a few. There's some of my favorites, like the sports movies, like the Invincible movie, and Rudy is an old-time classic, and The Miracle on Ice. They're all great stories. They're all, people had to overcome some great adversity, some great trials, some great stuff to get to where they were. And they're good David and Goliath stories. I know, in Rudy, right, he's a child, and, you know, he comes from a poor family. You know, and his family loves Notre Dame, right? And he's like, I'm going to go there one day. And his parents are just like, no, you're not going to Notre Dame. Like, we don't have the money for that. You're not smart enough for that. You're not athletic. You're never going to play for Notre Dame, right? And then, you know, he starts working, and he grows up, and, you know, he doesn't quite get it academically. He doesn't quite make it there academically, right? And then he does. He puts the work in, and he finally gets accepted. But then he's not athletic enough to make the football team. And then he goes through years and years of that, and finally, he in his senior year, he makes the football team, right? And he's put all this hard work, and in the last game, he's finally recognized for the work that he does, and the coach throws him in there, right? And he gets the sack, right, at the end of the game, the last play of the game, and everyone's chanting, Rudy, Rudy. It's classic. It's a classic, right? It's a good underdog story. It's a good come from nowhere, a humble beginnings type of story. And everyone loves those stories. I admit, I like those stories. I love those stories. I love when someone puts the work in and puts the effort in to get to where they are. It's a good thing. It makes me feel like there's hope, right? It makes me feel like there's hope. I know there was a, I know, I'm going to say this, there was a football game probably about 10 years ago, big time football game. It was a Sugar Bowl, right? Not quite the national championship, but just underneath it in college football. And it was Boise State little old Boise State from nowhere, somewhere in Idaho. I couldn't even tell you where. You know, little old Boise State against the juggernaut Oklahoma, right? Oklahoma is thinking, they come into this game and they're thinking, this is beneath us. We should be playing for the national championship. This is beneath us. We don't deserve to be, they don't even deserve to be on the same field as us, right? Every run had written Boise State off. Everyone had written them off. They don't belong in this game. They just happened to beat some bad teams. They had an easy schedule, and they somehow weaseled their way into this game, right? They don't belong here. And Oklahoma's saying, we don't belong here either. But next thing you know, they're going touchdown for touchdown. And next thing you know, Oklahoma finds themselves in a dogfight, right? They find themselves, oh man, we didn't think that this was even, this was supposed to be 50-7. This was supposed to be a blowout in the first quarter. This was supposed to be a snooze fest. This was supposed to be a walk in the park for us. But next thing you know, the little underdog, Boise State, they're scoring touchdowns and going touchdown for touchdown with Oklahoma. Next thing you know, you got a great game on your hands. You got one of the best games in college football history. You got one of the best games in football history going on right then and there. They're going blow for blow. And next thing you know, little old Boise State, they hang around, they hang around, they hang around. Next thing you know, in the fourth quarter, they got the ball. And they have a opportunity to tie the game. And they do. But then the coach is like, we're not going into overtime. We're not beating this team in overtime. We got to go for two. We got to go for two. We got to get it in the end zone and win this game right now. And little old Boise State, what do? They come out on top, and it's the biggest upset in college football history that I know of. It's the biggest David and Goliath story that you could, you just can't make that stuff up, right? This little old Boise State comes from nowhere, beats the big juggernaut Oklahoma. They didn't deserve to be in the game. It shouldn't have been a game. As far as everyone was concerned, it wasn't going to be a game, right? But little old Boise State, they hung around, and they hung around. And next thing you know, they win the game with that two-point conversion, with that gutsy call. And sadly, and I say this, sadly, most of these stories, most of these underdog stories, they end in a way. The post-game interviews were all about, we did this to do the game, and we made the plays. We did this. We worked hard. Everyone wrote us off. The adversity that we overcame, the world didn't think we could do it. The audience, none of the fans, none of the pros thought we could do it. But I made the plays. I did this, and I see that attitude, that same attitude that's written in Revelation chapter 3, that same attitude. I did this. I did this. I did this. I made the plays. I made the call to win the game. I overcame the adversity. I did this. And you see some of these underdog stories, it's about what I did to overcome these. And I'm not saying that these stories are bad stories, but they're not giving credit where credit is due, right? There's this whole idea of I did this. I know of someone who says I a lot too. In Isaiah chapter 14 and verse 13, if you turn there real quickly. In verse 13 it says, for thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. You see that same thing. He likes to start these sentences off with the letter I, right? I did this. I overcame the odds. I put the hard work. But where's the credit at? Where does the credit belong? I mean, we can't do anything without God. And sadly, that's how most of these underdog stories ended. They end with, I did this. I overcame this. I did all that. Not but by the grace of God you did. Not but by the grace of God you did. And like I said, this is the problem with the Laodicean age. It's I. It's the pride. The pride behind it. What is the root of all of this? It's pride. I did this. I did that. I did this. I overcame the odds. And like I said, where does that come from? We see it right here in Isaiah chapter 14. Who says I a lot? That's Satan. That attitude comes straight from the devil. That attitude of I did all of this thing, all of this stuff, that comes straight from him. That comes straight from the devil. I overcame all these odds. I overcame the adversity. I did this. I did that. And like I said, I don't know if we're in the Laodicean age, but there's a lot of facts that you can point to that would definitely point to that for sure. Like I said, I'm not here to make bold statements like we're in the last Laodicean age and God is coming back and, you know, all this stuff. I'm not here to make those type of statements. I'm just saying there are facts that would support that. That attitude of I did this and I did that is running rampant through all over the world, all over everybody. You know, that attitude is running so rampant. And Steph Curry, a famous basketball player, he writes a famous Bible verse. He's supposedly a self-proclaimed Christian, this Steph Curry, right? He writes on his basketball shoe, Philippians 14, except for he leaves out a very important thing. I can do all things. That's all he writes on his shoe. And then he puts Philippians 4:13 down there. I can do all things. That attitude is running rampant in this country. It is running rampant all over the world. I can do all things. How about you finish that verse off, Steph? How about you finish that verse off? Through Christ which strengtheneth me. You can't do anything without the Lord's strength. You can't do all things. That's a very arrogant, it's a very prideful statement to say, I can do all things. Where do people get off? That they think that they can do this. But you find this not only in that, not only do you find this in like the public figures and with like the famous people, but you find this in religions. Buddhists, they believe that through suffering and years of meditation, with spiritual and physical labor and good behavior, that you can reach enlightenment, that you can reach nirvana, that you can do all of these things, that I can do all this. I can meditate for years and years and years and reach enlightenment. The Muslims, they believe that if you follow the five pillars, you donate, you pray, be good to your fellow human, you believe in Allah, you make your confession of faith to Allah, and that you fast and you make your pilgrimage, that you can have a chance to go to heaven. That you can do all these things to get to heaven. That you can do it. You can work your way there. You just have to be good and you have to do all these things. You see this attitude all over. The Catholics, you say your Hail Marys, all fathers. You confess to the priest. You pay a large sum of money upon death to get your way to heaven. That you, the idea that you can do all these things, that attitude is what Revelation 3 is talking about. That I can do all these things. I don't need Christ. I don't need Jesus Christ to get on top. I can do it on myself. And the pride and the arrogancy, that exactly is what Isaiah chapter 14, verse 13 says. I can do all these things. I don't need Jesus Christ. I don't need this. I don't need that. And that's what these religions are teaching. There's so many more. It's not just the Catholics. It's not just the Muslims. It's not just the Buddhists. And the second part of Revelation chapter 3 and verse 17, it says, the second part here, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. Wretchedness, I looked up the word just for the definition, deeply afflicted, distressed. Some of the synonyms of a wretched person is cold, depressing, compassionless, bleak. There's no fruit of the Spirit there. There's no joy. There's no peace. There's no love there. And that's in the antonyms. If you look at that, it's joyful, peace. The opposite of the synonyms. That's the opposite of the cold and depressing and compassionate. You got joyful, you got peace, you got love. They're miserable. It says it right here. They're wretched and miserable, and they're blind. They're blind in spirit. They're poor in spirit. They've set all of their focus on their worldly possessions, that they don't have anything up there. They have nothing up there because they didn't need Christ to get what they were. They put all the hard work, they put all the effort in. And I commend you. I like someone who could put their nose down and go to work and do a good job. But to say that you can do things without Christ being involved in it, it's arrogance. It's pride. It's that It makes me upset. I was writing this message yesterday, and I was getting upset while I was doing it because I'm thinking about all these things. I'm thinking about the Buddhists, and I'm thinking about what Revelation says, and I'm just thinking about some people that I know personally. And I'm like, the arrogancy of you to say this, and you don't need Christ? You don't need Jesus Christ? Did you forget? Like, even some Christians, do you forget where you come from? Do you forget where you came from? Do you forget how you got to where you are? And I must admit, I definitely did. Where is your reliance on God? Where is Philippians 4:13? I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. Where is 1 Peter 5:7? Casting all your cares on him, for he careth for you. Romans 8:28. Where is that? You can't do all this on your own. The fact that I can get up this morning and come to church is nothing but by the grace of God. He deserves all the credit for that. I can't take any credit for coming up here and giving this sermon to you today. It's all but by the grace of God. It has nothing to do with me. It has all to do with Jesus Christ. All of it. Turn, if you would, to 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians chapter 12. In verse 8 and 9, for this thing I besought the Lord thrice, that it might depart from me. And he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, I will rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Christ's grace will sustain you. It is sufficient for you. So if you are the underdog and you find yourself in an underdog story, you're not relying upon yourself. You rely on Christ. It's Christ's strength that gets you through your day. It's Christ's strength that gets you through your work day, your work week. It's Christ's strength that brings us here today. It's all Christ. It's God's grace that brings us here today. It's not me. I didn't do anything. It's because his grace is allowing me to do this today. Turn, if you would, over to Psalms chapter 39, verse 7. In verse 7 it says, and now, Lord, what wait I for? For my hope is in thee. If I have to hope in myself to get me to heaven, if I have to hope in my works to get me to heaven, it's a lost cause. It's a lost cause because I know what this heart is. I know what's inside this heart. I know how wicked, I know how corrupt it can be, and just like that at any moment. If I have to rely on myself, if my hope is in me to get myself to heaven, then forget about it. I'm a lost cause. I'm a lost cause. And David says here, my hope is in thee. And all these religions are saying that it should be you. You need to do all these things. You have to get yourself. You have to be a good person. You have to do all these things. You have to meditate. You have to do all this stuff. But here it says, my hope is in thee. My hope is in thee. If I have to rely on myself, then forget about it. Then just forget about it, because it's not happening. I seen this article the other day. The title was called 21 Signs of Spiritual Awakening. So I'm like, oh, this is going to be good. Let's check this out. This is going to be interesting. And I didn't write them all down, but I wrote down a few of them. And spoiler alert, there's no mention of Jesus Christ in this. There is no mention of God, Jesus Christ, his grace, his mercy. There's none of that in any of this. So first of all, we have reevaluate your beliefs. Okay? Let go of attachments. As you can see, there's a common theme here. You have to do some things here. Find inner peace. How can you find inner peace without Jesus Christ? It's impossible. It is impossible. And Revelation chapter 3, verse 17 says it. They are miserable and they are poor. You can't find your inner peace without Jesus Christ. Another one is, you dream more vivid. Okay. Increased compassion. That's fake because where does our compassion come from? Where does that come from? It comes from the Lord. It comes from Jesus Christ. It says, with spiritual awakening comes confidence and a deep sense of self-worth. Wow. That's just exactly what it says in Revelation, huh? And flourishing, you'll flourish in whatever you set out to accomplish, you'll flourish in whatever you do. I see these things, and this is why I'm getting so angry. I'm like, the nerve of you people, how ignorant, the arrogance of these statements that you have to do all these things, that you have to do all these stuff, the arrogancy. And the reason why I get so upset and I got so mad is it's just because of God's grace and what it is. I've been doing a lot of study in the last about a month about grace and the complexity. It's not just, you know, sometimes we take that word for granted and what it actually is. And I've been doing a lot of research, a lot of study on grace. And and the study on God's grace and the grace of God and the dispensing of grace and coming to the throne of grace. There's so much stuff to go into, and I don't want to spend too much time. I want to keep the focus here, but God's grace is on display every second with every decision we make, with everything we do, anything we learn. It's because of God's grace. And I started this study about a month ago, and it just so turned out I have a lot of alone time at work, so I'm able to listen to my headphones and whatnot. So I've been hearing a lot of preaching, and I've been doing this study for about a week or two, and next thing I know, Dr. Peacock has about an 8-part series on grace. And what do you call that? You call that a coincidence? No, I call that God's grace, because I've been doing this study on grace, and now here we go. Just so happens God's like, okay, let me throw this at you here. Let me throw this, you know. And Dr. Peacock's done like an 8-part series about God's grace. And it's been an incredible thing, and I can't help but think like, and this is why I'm getting so mad and so frustrated, because I'm like, God's grace is so good. It is so good. Like, I couldn't even ask for that. But the Lord knew that I needed this at this time, because this is what I've been studying on. And then God just throws that in there. That is God's grace on display right there. I mean, if that's not God, that has nothing to do with me, what I did, anything at all. That is the Lord working. That's all it is. I can't take any credit for that. And then I see these articles about 21 signs of spirit, and I'm like, you fools. You arrogant fools, to think that you can just accomplish this by yourself, by meditating for hours upon end, that you think that you can find your enlightenment? I mean, what a joke. It infuriated me, because I'm like, man, God, you've been so good. I can't even imagine what you must think of all this. I can't even imagine what the Lord would think about this. Like, if it makes me mad, how mad do you think that he is? How angry do you think he is about all of this? And the reason I bring this idea of this pride and versus kind of grace type of thing is because I just had a situation. If you would have asked me a week ago, hey, Joe, do you think you're a prideful man? I would have been like, well, no, I don't think so. Like, I don't think that there's any pride. Like, I don't think so. But I had a situation come up this week, and the Lord kind of showed me a couple things. And there's nothing wrong with taking pride in the work you do, like wanting to do a good job in the things that you're doing. But there becomes a fine line when you do that for so long, when you put, you know, your best effort into whatever project you got going, and you keep on doing that. There's a difference between taking pride in the work that you're doing and having pride and saying, I'm better than other people at this. Or, you know, I've become so good at what I've done. And you sometimes forget the reason why you're so good is because God gave you the opportunities to get good at what, and he taught you these ideas. And so I had a situation come up this week that kind of really, the Lord kind of smacked me around a little bit and kind of put me back in my place a little bit here. So the boss came up to me, Tuesday, and he said some things. He said some things about something, and I thought he was completely wrong, and I thought he was unjust and unright for saying it, right? And that thing stewed in me for the next 2 hours. I wasn't rude to him. I listened to what he had to say, and I was like, okay. But deep down in me, the things that he was saying, I was like, how dare you? The things that I was thinking, the things that were going through my head, I'm like, you're wrong. You're wrong. And I thought, and I, to be honest with you, I'm going to still say this right now. I do think he was unjust in what he said. I do. But the Lord used that situation to point out some things in me. Because he said these things, I'm getting all defensive within myself. I'm like, listen here, dude. I'm one of your best workers. You know, I do this. I break my back for you. I come to work on time every day for you. Like, I think I'm being a pretty model employee. You know what I'm saying? I think I'm doing a good job. And like, whatever the case was, that why he came up to me and said, whether he had a bad day or whether, you know, he was just wanting to push this job, or maybe, you know, the higher ups were putting the pressure on him to get it done faster, or whatever the case was, I don't know. But I do still believe that he was unjust, but the Lord used this situation to kind of put my pride in check. Because here I am, I'm stewing on it, I'm getting angry. I'm like, man, this stinking guy, I'm working away, and I'm working harder now, because I'm like, now I'm mad. You got me mad, and I'm going about my business. I'm working harder because I'm upset, and I'm just stewing in my brain. I'm like, how dare this guy? You know, I come to work every day, I break my back for him, and blah, 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 and he's got nothing but negative things to say to me. Like, when the first thing in the morning when I walk through the door, I'm like, what's the deal here? You know, and I'm getting mad, and I'm getting upset, I'm stewing on this thing, and I'm stewing on it. And I'll tell you what, guys, some pretty wicked thoughts came into my mind. I'll be honest with you. My mind, it got, I'm not going to go there, I'm not going to tell you what I was thinking, but I thought some pretty nasty stuff. And I was like, oh, I'll show this guy. But what do you call that? What is that? I didn't know it was within. I didn't know that I had that pride in me. I didn't know that. But the Lord used this situation to kind of bring that out of me, and that is pride. I am one of your best workers. I come to work on time. I am the one who's always breaking my back. Whenever you need something, I am the one who's always raising my hand to be the first in line. How dare you come to me with some nonsense? How dare you, you know, how dare you say this stuff? You know, and that's the kind of the situation that I found myself in. I told you guys, I stewed on this for up until coffee break, up until my first break, 3 hours. I was just stewing on this stuff, and I'm just like, man, like this stinking guy. I was so mad. I was so upset. And then I heard that still small voice. How's that pride treating you? And then I was just like, okay, Lord, I guess we need to have a talk. And after feeling convicted, I started to have a little bit of conversation. And let me tell you, don't ever, when you're feeling like this, don't ever start the conversation with the Lord. But Lord, I'm going to tell you, it's a bad idea. Because I'm thinking, but Lord, I come to work on time. But Lord, I do a good, and Lord's, I don't care. I don't, and every time I feel this, as I'm trying to start my sentence, the Lord's just like, I don't care. I can feel it. I can feel it within me. I can feel the Lord just be like, I don't care. I don't care. I don't care. This is not what we're talking about. How's that pride treating you? How is that pride treating you? You know, you're all worked up. You're what it says in Revelation chapter 3 and verse 17. You're miserable right now. You've been stewing on this for 3 hours now, and you're miserable. Don't start this conversation, but Lord. But Lord, I did this. But Lord, I did that. And I'm just telling you guys out of our personal experience, like, this is what has been going on in my life the last week. And then you get Pastor McDonald, he comes up and talks about serving the Lord all the day. I wasn't serving the Lord all the day. And I'm like, I'm sitting there on Thursday and I'm like, Lord, I thought I already apologized to you for this. Like, I thought we got over this thing. And, you know, and then Pastor McDonald is talking about how you can serve the Lord all the day and doing all these things. And I wasn't serving the Lord all the day. I wasn't putting my best foot forward. I got so caught up in my pride. And, like, you see, I had gone through my apprenticeship. I've gone through this 4-year apprenticeship. And now I've made this transition for the last 6 months where I was the tool getter to now I'm the tool user. And before I got into this trade, I was doing the same kind of work. So I have experience doing this. And more I do this job, the more and more that experience grew confidence in me that I can do this job. Like I can do this, right? But what do you call that? Where did that come from? Where did that start? I got my start welding and fabricating and doing all this stuff because a company was so in need of employees that they were hiring people and training them with no job experience whatsoever. What do you call that? Turn if you would to 2 Peter chapter 2. Oh, I'm sorry, chapter 3. 2 Peter chapter 3. Verse 17. Ye therefore, beloved, seeing ye know these things before, beware lest ye also, being led away with the error of the wicked, fall from your own steadfastness, but grow in grace. This whole thing that starting off doing this fabrication, this welding that I've gotten started off to, I didn't do any of that. I just applied for the job. The Lord is the one who opened the door for all this. That is what I would like to call growing in grace. Now, whether it's not grace as far as it's a different kind of grace, but it is grace nonetheless. God gave me the ability. He gave me the knowledge. When God talked to Noah and he said, hey, I want you to build an ark, that was because he had found grace in the sight of God. He gave Noah the knowledge to do that. He gave me the knowledge to know what I know how to do now. That didn't come from me. That because the Lord opened a door and I just so happened. I didn't mess up this one time. And let me tell you, I messed up so much. But I was able to walk through that door. I was able to take that grace that the Lord was giving me and doing something. And I had completely taken my eyes off of that. And that's what the Lord had kind of, for the next couple of hours, that's what was running through my mind. After all that pride, after all that stuff is, hey, you didn't get to where you were on your own. I opened the doors. You just so happened to walk through them. You just so happened to walk through these doors. You didn't get there on your own. What you know is because of me. And he deserves that credit. Because how can you make that up? A company is so in need of employees that they're training people with no... You can't... It's hard to walk into this field without having welding certs, without knowing how to do these things. Because if you mess something up... You mess the structure up and the whole building can come down. It's very rare for you to just get these opportunities to do what, you know, some of this construction stuff. It's very rare without having some type of experience, without having some type of certifications, without having this stuff. And so the Lord really put that on me as, hey, you didn't get here on your own. You didn't get to do these things on your own. Why are you getting so defensive? Why are you getting so defensive? The one thing that I've learned about I know short time that I've been married, but the one thing that I've learned is I lived alone for a lot of years. And I got accustomed to doing things a certain way. And, you know, when someone comes in and then they change that all up, and you're like, but I've been doing this and I've been fine for all these years. But why are you getting so defensive? Why are you getting so defensive? Is there a better way of doing things? Why? That's something that I personally am going to work on. That's something that the Lord has put on my heart to get on. But why do we get so defensive when there's a little bit of criticism? Why do we get so offensive? Maybe the Lord's trying to say something. Maybe the Lord's trying to get a hold of your conscience. Why get so defensive? There's a story that I would like to go into, but I'm not sure that we have enough time to get into it today. In 2 Kings, talking about Hezekiah, the king of Hezekiah, and the pride that he showed. I don't know that I want to get into, but there's a lot more information that I have on this, and maybe I'll get into it more next week. But the idea is here, is if you can learn anything, learn from my mistakes. The pride, it can sneak, sometimes you don't know that it's there. And it can kind of just sneak up on you, and then you're like, whoa, I didn't know that was in me. But it's there. And it can happen to any one of us at any point in time. So we'll open it up to some questions and concerns, and we'll go from there. Any comments, questions? Anything at all? Yep.
I like in the next verse in Revelation 18 where it says, I counsel thee to buy it in gold. I mean, this is right after he told us that we have no money.
Right.
And then we're counseled to buy. But it doesn't say from me, it says of me.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
right.
Like you were talking about that still small voice that corrected you was what was bought for you.
Right. Right. Absolutely. It all is the grace of God. And that's kind of the point that I want to make is everything in every aspect, in every second, in every minute of the day is but by God's grace. It's not just something we read in our Bible and we just vaguely look over and like, oh yeah, God's grace is good. No, God's grace is amazing. It is so good. And more I dig into this thing about grace, the more and more I'm just like, man, we are saved by grace. But it doesn't end there. It doesn't end there. And I mean, it's such a powerful thing. It's such a powerful thing. And you're right. That's God's grace. Absolutely. 100%. Yes?
So when the scriptures say put on the whole armor of God, it's every moment.
Right.
It's not just a random battle here or skirmish once in a while or when things really get hard. The world is undated with the world's philosophy and thinking and rudiments of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Keep ourselves straight even after we're saved.
Right.
We have the grace of God in us.
Right. Right.
So we watch and pray.
Right.
I'm going to point here in Revelation 3. God is speaking to Jesus Christ. I think the word I speak himself is mentioned like 12 times. And one time you mentioned it, it's now I, pride. So here he's, I will do this, I will do this, I will do this. And then he's speaking himself, God. Everything. And as soon as we get into I, pride, here's down right there.
Right.
It's one time you say I have instead of
right. Right. Anything else? Yep.
It also falls into the three categories, you know, first John there, chapter 2. You got the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why Lucifer was kicked out of
right. Absolutely. Right.
You know, so it's part of the flesh, which I think we all still have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got the grace of God,
mm-hmm.
but you still have to understand that
right.
it's there.
And absolutely.
Always walk in grace.
Right. And that's the thing, it's sneaky. It can sneak up on you. I didn't know it was there until I'm sitting there, I'm getting all upset and all worried and flustered, and I was like, why? Why? You know, and that's one thing that Brother McDonald, he was preaching about is like, and what I took away from that message is how do you serve all the God? And I'm like, how do you serve God all the day? And I'm just thinking, if the Lord was my boss, would I have the same attitude towards him? If the Lord was my boss, would I be thinking these same things or would I be listening? You know, and that's one of the things, it's just like, you serve the Lord all the day, you know, all the day. Yep.
Jeremiah 23:29 says the Bible is like, the word of God is like a camera that breaks right through that light.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. 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 Anything else? All right, we'll close in prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, thank you for your grace, Lord. Thank you for all the things that you do for us, Lord. Thank you for the things that you do for us that we aren't aware of, Lord. And I just ask and pray that you would continue to help us, Lord, and to deal with these things, Lord. And Lord, I just ask and pray that you'd be with us here today, Lord. Be with Brother Frank as he gets up in here and preaches, Lord. I just ask and pray that you'd prepare the congregation, the hearts of the congregation, Lord, to hear your words, Lord. In Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen.